because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye summary of this week in the Capitol and in politics. Well, J.R., last week we thought we'd get to some of the most interesting Senate and Assembly races. Just a crush of news.
Yes.
So we will get to those races next week. Let's start with the governor's budget on transportation. Now, it was rolled out yesterday. I'll go first a little bit. The governor calls it a no tax or fee increase budget.
Vow to veto a budget. It comes back to him with a tax or fee increase without an offsetting tax cut somewhere else.
Right. So we're cutting his proposed budget would to do that. His proposed budget would cut spending on state highway program by $447 million. I think that's roughly a decrease of 15%. And then the final thing before I hand it off to you, he really wants us to not have transportation tax collections more than 25% of it go to pay debt service. For that reason, he's recommending borrowing only $500 million and not the $850 million that we're borrowing in this two-year budget. Anything, any other overview strike you?
Interesting that if you look at kind of like the big picture where the delays are or the projects being put off, it's all southeastern, I mean not all, but the big ones are southeastern Wisconsin. And part of that's be expected because that's been the biggest beneficiary of the mega projects the last 15 years.
The term is
Zoo,
mega projects.
Marquette. All these things, 94 North South.
Yep.
So when he pushes off 94 North South in Racine, for example, Racine County, well, that's one of the big projects that's left to do. Same thing with like the north leg of the Zoo interchange. So it's a little bit expected, but it's also made some people angry, like Robin Voss, the Speaker of the Assembly.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit. He also, he's got $30 million in there to plan the east-west from basically Miller Park to the Zoo. But that's just planning. So that's it's
planning and beginning the process of acquiring land and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, you're kind of putting that in the pipeline, and I'm sure it also, going back 94 North South, makes those guys go, well, wait a second, you know, why are you doing that? We're next, aren't we?
And there's this huge controversy on the North South, I'm sorry, the East West Freeway, whether you double deck. Now Dot says we're not going to double deck. But anyway, okay, we're getting in the weeds. Let's talk about the winners now under the governor's, under the secretary and governor's proposed WISDOT budget. First of all, no delay in rebuilding highways 1040, 441 in Fox Valley. No, I want to talk about this. No delay in expanding I-3990 from Madison to Illinois. Mm-hmm. That's why the governor, when he made four appearances yesterday, was in Edgerton with a backdrop of construction.
The world's largest Culver's, yes. We're in the parking, parking lot for the announcement. But yeah, I mean, that they made that a big project. They're not going to delay that. But then you see other projects getting pushed off, like the Verona Road interchange in Madison on the Beltline. That gets pushed off for a couple of years.
Yeah,
you know, Highway 15 up and out of Game County, that gets delayed by, so, you know, a little squeezing the bubble, if you will, on both sides.
Oh, but he also, and makes a big deal about this, we're going to give local government $65 million more, which may explain why his other two appearances were in Plover and Chippewa Falls. And we're going to an additional $69.7 million for maintenance program on state highways. So what does he do by offering local government $65 million more? Does he urge them not to lobby against the overall package? Because you saw that statement from some Wisconsin counties and the League. It was kind of one hand clapping, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is, I think we talked about before, the going thought was that Walker would put the money into locals and safety and maintenance, which he did, and then sacrifice the big projects. But by doing that, what he's trying to, politically what he's trying to do is say, okay, I'm addressing this concern of the local governments and taking care of their needs. Yeah. Now you, Robin Voss, John Nygren, Jim Senny, you want to raise revenues, like you said in Edgerton, define how much you want and run on it this fall. You go out there, put a plan, and you run on it this fall. Like, you guys have responsibility to do that. And, oh, by the way, I haven't seen many people run on this, he says. So he's trying to put a marker on those guys because he thinks he's going to win this fight in the end.
Yeah, it's really interesting. As you said, he told Charlie Sykes, I don't see anybody running for office on November 8th saying, I want to raise your gas tax or license plate renewal fee.
Now, the road building industry will tell you that, and the advocates for transportation will say that if you give people a choice of, or tell them, hey, you know, this is going to cost more in the long run, you're putting off projects, then they can win that argument.
Yeah.
But I've always been taught that arguments can only be 30 seconds long. You know why? That's like the TV ad. And if you have to go beyond that, you're in trouble. And it's easy to say, these guys are trying to raise your taxes. And, you know, some Republican operatives I've talked to are like, this is the worst thing in the world for Republican, any Republican, to run on a gas tax. Why are they doing this? And then there is the idea of, okay, Robin Voss is out there aggressively talking about all options table. So is Nygren, co-chair of finance, and Steinicke, the majority leader. But where is the rest of the caucus? Are the rank and file members there with them? Can they get them there? It was oddly quiet from the Assembly GOP caucus yesterday about the budget. There wasn't a whole lot of people like saying positive things about it. They held their fire. In the Senate, you had a couple people praising it. Van Wongard saying, I may not vote for this budget because you're not doing 94 North-South. I was promised right. on a snowy night 5.5 years ago it'd get done.
Yeah.
So is Robin Voss out front of his caucus? Are they behind him? That's going to be a big thing to watch.
It is a big deal. But let's list the losers. Okay, there's this 3-year delay in rebuilding Highway 23 between Fond du Lac and Plymouth.
Of course, part of that is, side note, is a federal judge has put that whole thing on hold.
Judge Edelman.
So why put money into a thing you can't do anyway?
But let's talk about the Zoo Freeway. He's going to finish east-west. We're committed to that.
The core of the interchanges.
Yes, but in terms of north-south, two years more delay, pushing it back to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
No funds to rebuild I-94 south of Milwaukee, which goes through, the 63rd Assembly District of Speaker Voss. We'll get back to that. We'll expand on that. 2-year delay in rebuilding highways 1851, Verona Road. That's represented by Democrats anyway. What the heck? And a 1-year delay in rebuilding Highway 15 in Fox Valley. Any big surprises in those targeted for delays?
No, we kind of knew. I mean, those are the big projects. Those are the things that are sucking up a lot of the money. We knew those were kind of the ones that would be hit, if you will. 15, I don't think we were talking about that very much, but Verona Road, all the focus is on Verona Road, the zoo, 94 east-west, north-south, and 3990. That's and 10440. That was not a surprise. Those are the ones that got the focus, if you will.
Now, let's talk about the exchange yesterday between the governor and Voss on this very issue. Speaker Voss told you, delaying a project costs you money. It doesn't save you money. I'm not going to fund increased expenses in one area by increasing expenses in another. The governor's WISDOT's budget is, quote, phony math.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Voss, Majority Leader Steinicke, Assistant Majority Leader Knodel, mm-hmm. and Joint Finance Chair John Nygren backed it up. What was the strongest quote they said in that statement, J.R., you remember?
Oh, which one do you want to pick from?
A political.
Oh, they call it a political solution. They've been using that word for a while, a political solution, if you will, because there is this undercurrent in all this that will Governor Walker still be governor after 2019? He has said he's going to put off a decision on seeking re-election until after the budget is done. There is some feeling that he's not going to run again. And these guys, who this has been a feeling I've had since the last budget they did of, well, he's not going to be here, and we'll be stuck with the bill and got to fix this in 20 on our own. So they're feeling a little bit like this is a short-term solution to get him through this. Now, the governor has said he intends to run. He's all there. But that's part of what's driving this, I think, is these guys saying, but it doesn't do it long-term, and we're going to have to fix it long or deal with it long-term.
Yeah, and the governor dug in his interview again with Charlie Sykes. There's no tax, gas tax or registration fee hikes. And I'm going to say it again. Our gas tax, they stopped indexing it. That was in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been no increase in the $75 check that you and I write to renew our license plate since 2008. That's just historical perspective. But the governor said, you do it as you can afford it. You pay as you go. That's what we're doing. He's really dug in on this thing.
One thing somebody told me this week was both sides are painting themselves into corners that they may regret sometime next spring, hopefully next spring, not early summer, trying to hash out the final document on how we do the budget.
Yeah. And just a footnote, one of about 12 campaign interviews I did last week was with Representative Mary Chaya, member of finance. And you know what? She's not with Speaker Voss on the potential for raising revenues, just a PS. That dripping noise that we heard on Wednesday, JR, was the leaks to the U.S. part of the Guardian newspaper, which mm-hmm. is from England.
Yes.
Documenting, well, the biggest story was three gifts totaling $750,000 from Harold Simmons, the owner of a lead paint manufacturer, these gifts in 2011 and 2012 to help Walker and Senate Republicans survive the recalls. Now, we knew about taconite money that had been given in the same way, so this was the second major gift of dark money. And by the way, the taconite, we now know they just didn't give $700,000, mm-hmm. they gave $1.1 million.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. Now, this was given to Club for Growth, mm-hmm. which helped Walker survive the recall, Senate Republicans survive the recall. Remind us how big a player Club for Growth is?
Club for Growth is a major factor in elections. They run issue ads. They call them. The ones who don't say, they don't say go vote for somebody or vote against them. They say John Doe is a bad person. Go tell John Doe he's a bad person. Anyway, Club for Growth is run by R.J. Johnson, who is a longtime aide and confidant of Governor Walker. He's had this dual role for a long time of being kind of helping the governor, plus also run this group. And for years, we're told by the then GAB that long as there's a wall, it's okay. Well, we're seeing from these documents what wall was there and what wasn't there. And it seems like, from what we can tell, that R.J. was directing what was going on, and there was input from the governor, or he at least kept abreast. Was going on, and he was soliciting donations to the group.
Some of those emails, have you had a chance to go through the more than 1,000?
Skimmed a good deal of them, but not all of them.
Well, campaign advisors were telling the governor, go to Sheldon Adelson and ask for, do a $1 million ask, is that right?
Now, here's the thing, a lot of these things were in previously released documents. The federal court, where there's been lawsuits about the John Doe investigation, mistakenly posted a bunch of stuff on a Friday night in August of 14, I think it was. So we knew that there's examples out there of Governor Walker making asks, the plan that they had for fundraising and directing money to the Club for Growth, with the idea being it was all going to be secret and nobody ever traced the donations. We saw through those documents the first time what was going on.
Right.
These documents provide another slice of that.
Yes.
They add more details of what was going on, but it's not like it was new stuff in terms of like the behavior. We knew what was happening.
But one very interesting thing, and it's a made for the 28 election if the governor seeks a third term. It's just you can just see it as an ad. There any doubt about governor's personal involvement in raising this money? There's a notation on the memo line of a $10,000 check because Scott Walker asked. And Assembly Democratic Leader Peter Barca seized on this, and he said, and I'm going to read his quote, because Scott Walker asked, the era of clean and open government is over. Now we know why Wisconsin has some of the worst campaign finance laws in the country, because Scott Walker asked. But when, again, third reference to Charlie Sykes, when Charlie Sykes asked the governor about this, he said, judges have repeatedly, and he made this point in press conferences yesterday, judges have repeatedly shut down this baseless investigation. Documents clearly show nothing illegal. And he also said, Republicans like me and those on the Joint Finance Committee have been trying to overturn the 2005 Supreme Court decision extending liability to manufacturers, including those that made lead paint, for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the governor's defense. And he also said in Fox Valley, I know you tried to pin him down in Edgerton, he wouldn't explain that. He wouldn't take questions on this?
Well, we asked him a couple things. One, explain relationship with the Club for Growth. Will you acknowledge raising money for him? And he danced around that topic. But when he went up to Fox Valley, he said, I'm not raising money for the group right now.
Right.
Or something along those lines.
It was his exact term.
So it's been kind of odd why the governor won't like own up to it. But also at the same time, I mean, I don't know if there's any benefit for him. These questions will die out. This is kind of like a couple-day story, if you will. It'll percolate. The people who hate Governor Walker will bring it up again and again and again. But unless he runs again in 18, will it be a campaign issue? Probably. But remember, in 14... we knew what was going on because of the document dump in August, and he still won re-election. So he's proven, even in 12 with a recall, he's proven he can win even when there's been these John Doe questions hanging over his head in the public.
Right. But there's one other aspect of this. In the wake of this, Milwaukee D.A. Chisholm said the law was broken here, and then Speaker Voss asked Attorney General Schimmel to consider appointing a special prosecutor to investigate the illegal leak of documents that were under seal. But other documents have been leaked before to other people in this.
Well, that's what's interesting. John Chisholm immediately said after this, not long after these documents kind of hit there, that he supports any effort to try and find out where this came from. Francis Schmitz, who's special prosecutor, oversaw John Doe 2, which was all about the coordination between Walker's campaign and conservative groups. I talked to him, and he said, there are documents I've never seen before in this pile.
Really?
Yes. So there's that piece. And then, oh, by the way, the Democrats who are watching the Republicans call for the special prosecutor, well, what about Eric O'Keefe from the Club for Growth, who openly defied the secrecy order of John Doe to go to the Wall Street Journal and talk about the subpoena received? Now, will they go after him too, or what's going to be the deal? So there's that piece of that puzzle, if you will.
Also, the document dump, the leak, the story was written from the Guardian, which is headquartered in England.
Yeah.
How do you go after an English news organization, even though it's through the American subsidiary?
What's interesting, some of these documents is, if you look through them, there aren't like obvious exhibit labels on them. So here's the thing. Conservatives have worried about this ever since the probe was shut down by the state Supreme Court, and there was all this wrangling about who could keep the documents and where. State Supreme Court said, well, let's keep them under seal. And our clerk, Chisholm and company, said, no, we have to have a set of these things to defend ourselves. One, we're trying to appeal the decision shutting the probe. And two, we're being sued personally by a former target over these. We need to have this stuff available to us to defend ourselves. They've been worried that this exactly would happen, that something would be a leak. So they've been warning about this for a while.
Well, and Democrats connected these dots. Gogebic Taconite donated $1.1 million, we now know, and then the legislature passed a less stringent law regulating mining. Now, that mine up north never happened. So now we know Mr. Simmons gave $750,000, and then in 2013, the Joint Finance Committee voted to retroactively extend, help me get this right, legal liability exempting.
The restrictions on the lawsuits, essentially.
Thank you.
So the thing, and then Walker, the governor, made this point that you talked about, that they've been pushed for a long time. This is a state Supreme Court decision in 2005, I think it was.
Written by then Justice Butler.
Basically said, okay, lead paint industry went out of business in 1978. No more lead paint, if you will. But the people who still own those, or the successors of those companies are still around. Yep. If you are sickened by lead paint, you can sue the industry, even though you can't prove which one made the product that sickened you. Republicans had long complained about that decision before they passed the law. So there is, the governor has a point there that, you know, this was a new. The question always becomes, is the donation the cause? Is the donation the reward? Was the donation a coincidence to the action? You know, and now you have Luther Olson, for example. He's being targeted in his Senate seat. He was on joint finance, still is on joint finance, and voted for this provision put in the budget in the wrap-up motion. Will that cause him problems?
He gave a curious statement. Basically, I'm paraphrasing now. I don't have the exact quote. I cast a vote. Somebody else got the money. You know,
how's that pay to play?
Right. And so, I called the campaign of Sheila Harsdorf, and she said, because this is before the Supreme Court, because the local John Doe prosecutors still want the right to reopen it, the campaign aide to Senator Harsdorf said, we cannot comment. Do you see, well, the Democrats then, Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, immediately came out and said, this is pay to play on the part of Senator Olson, Republican Senator Olson, Republican Senator Harsdorf. Do you see them, do you see that hurting their, they're both up for reelection?
I get the impression that Olson's the one they're going to focus on, the Democrats, because his seat is a little bit more manageable in terms of trying to win an election. It's not heavily Republican, but Luther has overperformed the top of the ticket last couple cycles. It's difficult because you have a media market to the north in Green Bay and the south in Madison to cover it.
Yeah.
But they think with this, the votes on joint finance and 15 on open records, the votes to deal with the GAB, add all this stuff up, you can make a case in their minds of there being an ethical problem with, you know, the something stinks in Denmark argument with Republicans in general. But here's the thing. You and I both know from years of being journalists that you can write 1,000 stories about a topic, but until it's put in a TV ad and money's put behind it, it's not real for most voters. Why? Because they don't see, they're not paying attention to this stuff. They have lives. So will there be a sustained effort on TV, radio, mail, whatever, to go after Luther or Sheila? That's when you know it's really real.
You went to the governor's Edgerton press conference to talk about the WSDOT budget. Hmm? But then when this came up, the donations from Mr. Simmons and him soliciting, he didn't want to answer those questions, did he? At one point, the State Patrol said, don't film the car. That was pretty interesting.
Part of it is that the thing that was bad for the governor was he wanted a message to be about transportation. Instead, it was all about, I mean, that was a lead story for most of us. You know, Thursday was not about the news conference on the DOT. It was about, this is our first chance with Governor Walker about these new revelations. And so,
yes,
you know, I think he's going to be out there still talking transportation for a while, keep pushing that message, but it definitely overshadowed what he wanted to talk about.
Okay, new subject. Bring us up to date on the back and forth charges, campaign charges of corruption between Senator Johnson's campaign and Russ Feingold's campaign.
We are mired in the competing ethics complaints at this point. So we talked before, the Republicans have accused Russ Feingold of violating the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal executive branch employees from basically doing political things. Now, you could, if I'm a federal employee and I want to talk, I would think about running for office someday, I could talk to my family, my friends, and say, hey, is it a good idea? What I can't do is basically talk strategy and lay the foundation for my bid. They're accusing him of doing that at the State Department.
He was a special emissary appointed by Secretary of State Kerry to Africa.
They're pushing him to request that the State Department release his records, his emails from that time, because the state says the FOIA request Republicans file will take until December of this year, after the election, to fill. Democrats this week have filed a complaint with the Senate Ethics Committee accusing Ron Johnson of basically taking a corporate contribution to his campaign. If you go back to 2010, he put $9 million of his own money into the race. Not long after that, Packer, the plastics company he helped create, paid him a $10 million in deferred compensation. Now, at the time it first came up, Senator Johnson said, basically, I negotiated with the company, and I'll have to tell you about it. You know, right. Now they've been trying to explain how this happened, because the Dems are saying, look, if there's no agreement in place before this, it looks like he basically took the corporate money to pay himself back for the campaign. And he didn't detail the agreement in his ethics or his disclosure statement. That's a problem, they say. He should release what's in there. Well, now the Johnson campaign is saying that there's always understanding that he was going to get a deferred compensation because he went without a salary for 13 years before he left the company, and they worked it out. Once he left, they went to independent groups, outside entities, and asked them like to work out a justifiable compensation, and away we went. The bottom line is this. These complaints likely aren't going to go anywhere legally in terms of like either them facing trouble, but it creates the appearance of, or at least because the argument of, this guy's under investigation, he has an ethical problem, you can't trust him. Because they're both making arguments of, you know, Republicans with Russ Feingold, he's changed, he's Washington, he's a longtime career politician, you can't trust him. Feingold's making the argument about Johnson of, this guy is not for you, he's out for the corporate, the billionaires, the millionaires, corporate CEOs like himself, and not for Wisconsinites. So it's more fodder for the argument, if you will, the bottom line.
Is this, do you feel, just the opening salvo, it gets nastier from here, or is this the best that both campaigns have on each other?
I'm sure there is more to come in terms of, like, attacks. The question kind of is for Johnson. He's now up with back-to-back positive campaign bio ads. You know, one was about, went back to the whiteboard he did in 2010, yeah. Same thing. This
zero manufacturers around. In the yeah. Senate in 2010. One. I'm the only one in 2016.
That'd be me. And then now it's this nice ad about how he helped this Green Bay family complete adoption of a child from the Democratic Republic of Congo. It kind of helps put a human face on Johnson, you know, makes him feel... People feel like, okay, I know this guy a little bit. I know what he's about. The issue, though, is they have to have a negative track, somebody does, to take Feingold's numbers down. Can Johnson run that on his own? Or does an outside group come in and put the money in to run that negative track and try and start knocking down Feingold's numbers?
And Feingold has started running an ad saying, Johnson in his 6 years has done nothing for the heroin and opioid addiction epidemic. I was just surprised by that. Last week, the nation heard that median income for middle-class people had gotten better. This week, we got the numbers for Wisconsin from the American Community Survey saying that between 2014 and 2015, household average income in Wisconsin rose 5.6% to $55,638, which is about $130 below the national average. This was the first increase in statewide Wisconsin household income since 2007. That's the good news. The bad news is it was still below the levels of 2007, 2008, before the Great Depression. But I was also intrigued by the wide gaps in household incomes in the Milwaukee area. For example, although household income in Milwaukee went up 7.1% to $45,859 in 2015, excuse me, that was 72% less than the $79,048 in Ozaukee County households in the same period. That's just interesting. Any PS thoughts on that?
A political angle to it. If you're Hillary Clinton, this is a nice talking point for her to talk about national incomes going up with Democrats in control. Cause yeah. Oftentimes in presidential elections, if you're trying to succeed your own party in the White House, if the economy's not doing well, if you don't feel good about it, that's hell against you. This is a good point for her to say, hey, things are going okay. You know, yeah. Let's continue this on.
And I wonder if some of this will play in Charles Franklin's next poll next week. We don't know, because we don't know his survey date. But also, the same information from the American Community Survey said Milwaukee had the third highest poverty rate of all 50 largest cities. The citywide poverty rate, 26.8%, behind only Detroit and Fresno. 39.2% of Milwaukee's children under age 18 lived in poverty. The poverty rate for all Milwaukee African Americans was 34.5%, a drop of 5 percentage points from 2014. But contrast that with the poverty rate for white non-Hispanic residents, 14.5%, and the poverty rate for Milwaukee's Hispanics was 33%. This is kind of a backdrop to the August unrest, the protests, mm-hmm. and the violence. And then Milwaukee officials came in. Governor, County Executive Abley, and Mayor Tom Barrett came in and said, "Here's $4.5 million. It's a Band-Aid."
Yeah, people will tell you that Wisconsin needs Milwaukee to succeed for the state to succeed. So the better that Milwaukee does, the better we do overall.
Right. Okay, time for stock report.
So state Senate ad buys. It's kind of interesting that here we are in mid-September now, and the American Federation for Children is going into the 12th Senate District, which is Tom Tiffany's, and running about $380,000 in TV, radio, and online advertising.
Which group?
American Federation for Children, pro-school choice group. They are knocking Brian Van Stippen, the Democrat, as a carpetbagger because he used to live in Stevens Point, actually on the Stevens Point City Council.
Stevens Point City
resigned
Council.
After 8 months, moved to the district. So anyway, what's been interesting about that is that people have been feeling that Tiffany was in good shape. So why go in there and spend all this money for a guy who you think is favored? No, by the way, has like $230,000 in the bank as of end of July, I think it was. Well, the reason I was told is that to take this seat off take it off the map right away, like mm-hmm. basically put it away, and then draw focus attention to the 18th. The 18th, by the way, is where we think the Greater Wisconsin Committee is going to spend about $900,000 on TV in the Green Bay market in October and early November.
That's the open seat between Mark Harris, the Winnebago County mm-hmm. Executive, and GOP candidate Dan Fine. Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, no problem. Greater Wisconsin said where it's going to spend the money or why, but you look around and go, well, there's a 12th next door, there's the 14th, the north part of that, but it's really about the 18th. I think Dems are going all in on winning that seat because they need to show progress toward taking back the majority of the Senate. To have a shot in 2020 to encourage resources to come in, to have an 18 and 20, I should say, to have a seat at the table in 2021 for redistricting, because that is really important for Democrats.
Right. Okay, next.
So the Medicaid budget, we are still going through the documents that were posted today at the DOA's website about how much aids are requesting for the next 2 years in terms of GPR, general purpose revenue. The Medicaid budget is never good. I mean, it's degrees of badness, right? Well, here they're asking for about $450 million to keep the Medicaid program going the next 2 years, helps the elderly and the poor. By comparison, the last three budgets have been 650, 658, I think, and $1 billion, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
That gives you perspective of, okay, it's not so bad. Now, the caveat is with the Medicaid budget, every time we talk about it is, any health outbreak, any down in the economy, it can blow a hole in that thing sky high. The other nice thing for this is, the letter we saw from new Secretary Seemeyer today said that they're expecting, as of right now, a $260 million surplus at the end of the biennium, June 30th of 2017, mm-hmm. that would lapse back the general fund. There are a couple benefits to that. One, it shows health in the Medicaid fund. Two, it helps the state's bottom line at the end of this biennium.
Sure does.
If anything doesn't go well.
Because GPR tax collections fell $85 million short in the last year.
And three, if you're Governor Walker and you're hoping to put more money into schools in the next biennium, you got a bigger cushion to start that process.
That's an excellent
point. Early next year.
And falling.
So it works. So the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, judge this week ruled they violated the open records law. Madison Teachers Inc., which was seeking, so got to back up a little bit. Now because of Act 10, if you're a union you want to certify, you have to get 51% of all members, not just those who vote, but all members to vote yes. MTI wanted, in the middle of its election, wanted a list of who had voted so they could go, like, basically urge people to turn out and vote. Because if you don't vote, it's basically a no. Work said, no, we can't give this to you during the election. MTI won handily anyway, then sued, and judge says, yeah, you can't hold back that stuff. Now, Work says it's going to appeal because they feel like giving the information out during election is open door to coercion, but it's a good win for MTI to get that.
That is a good call. Okay, we're almost out of time. Just two programming notes. Unless there is an avalanche of news, we will get to races to watch in both the Senate and Assembly. Also, Wisconsin I has now conducted more than 70 candidate interviews with candidates for the Congress, the Assembly, and the Senate. It's all at wisi.org. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 16th. Thank you.